Blog Talk Radio.
Children, if you're unfortunate enough to have your parents blast this into your ears, this is the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. I almost have to drop a couple of those adjectives there because I'm not feeling the love for the sport right now. I'm just not. But I'm Robert Winfrey. I'm your host for this thing. And, we live in a world where being the UFC champion means, first of all, you apparently suck enough to lose within your first two title defenses. And you then feel deeply entitled to call your own shots and ignore deserving contenders in favor of, wah, but I want. I am not especially enthralled with the state of mixed martial arts at the moment. I apologize in advance if my somewhat dour nature comes across too much. But such is my disposition at the moment. All right, tonight we are reviewing UFC 201. It was not a bad card. Not every fight was great, and that event suffered some setbacks before it ever got off the ground. A couple of fights fell through. Some fights wound up being different fights entirely. It happens. You know, we all understand that. It was a hindrance on the card. All the same, though, we got a decent overall night of fighting. And we're previewing next week's UFC Fight Night 92, which is the worst card on paper they've put together in the last 18 months, maybe 2 years. This thing sucks on paper. And I plan on going into detail about why. Now, if any of that strikes your fancy, if you've got a question or a comment, basically anything other than a long string of obscenities, I am prepared to take live callers here. The number to do so, if you feel so inclined, is 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. If you want to call in using Skype, there is a Skype icon. You have to be on the Blog Talk Radio player page to use it. It's on the top of the player, off-center to the right. You have to click on it. Then there's three or four boxes of dialogue that'll come up. Go through all those. You'll come up in my switchboard. I will get you on the air. All right, let's jump right into this. First up, back with me after a long, hard week of covering San Diego's Comic-Con, 411 Mania's Jack of All Trades, and my resident partner in crime for this show, Jeff Harris, is back with us. How you doing this week, Jeff?
Welcome back, Jeffrey. Thank you, Jeffrey. It's great to be back. I hope you missed me. I miss me. And I've uncovered the secrets for why great fighters lose horribly. It's because Robert Winfrey puts the Cthulhu curse on them. I've solved the mystery, everyone. Thank you.
Yeah, if only I had that kind of power. All right, also here for a special pseudo one-shot. He had a very specific request, and since this is basically his network, and I have not yet signed the contract for my eternal soul, but Mark Radulich is here with us again. He specifically has thoughts on the new UFC welterweight chicken. I mean, champion. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, it's great to be back on the show that I started, as a matter of fact. I don't come on very often, but when I do, it's because I have something very specific I need to talk about. I need to unburden my soul, if you will. So I appreciate the opportunity to do that tonight.
I know specifically the bit of business Mark wishes to discuss. So we're going to jump in with the main event of UFC 201. You know, it's not a good year to be a UFC champion. And I don't mean that financially. I mean that statistically. UFC champions following last night are a combined 4-8 on the year. Think about that for a minute. 12 title fights thus far to this point in the calendar year of 2016. 8 of them have resulted in the title changing hands. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Tyron Woodley knocked out Robbie Lawler in the first round. And it was a very fast fight. I don't have a whole lot to say about it technically other than Robbie Lawler. Why would you circle into the power hand of Tyron Woodley? Tyron Woodley has one punch, and it's a right hand. It's kind of looping. And you circled right into it. Just kind of boggles the mind a little bit. But, you know, Woodley has very good quick twitch muscles. He closes distance very well. It's one of his better tools. And he succeeds against southpaws because the right hand has a clear path to the target. I was utterly shocked that Robbie Lawler just made that big of a mistake in his movement. Plus, he started moving backwards so early, and Robbie Lawler doesn't fight well moving backwards. Neither does Tyron Woodley, but Woodley will move back to set up you coming forward into his punch. Just an odd fight, and it lasted all of like 2 minutes. Extraordinarily surreal watching that punch land, because as soon as he started throwing it, I realized, like, no, Robbie's not going to block that. And it landed, and then he started falling, and I was going, oh, crap. Yep, that happened. We now live in a world where the wet blanket, Tyron Woodley, is the champion. Man, I don't know. It's just rough for the champions nowadays, I guess. And I do want to talk a little bit, maybe towards the end of the show, about the inability of champions to hang on to their belts at this point for whatever reason. Because really, now, the longest tenured champion in terms of title defenses, and I think in terms of years at this point, is Demetrius Johnson. He's got 8 in a row, only flyweight champion ever. He would have moved up to 9 if he hadn't got hurt. I appreciate the fact that champions have to be on their toes nowadays. I don't give Wilson Hayes a big chance to beat Mighty Mouse. But the second longest tenured, you've got Mighty Mouse on that big streak. Number 2 is the strawweight champion Joanna Jędrzejczyk at a whopping 3. It's an odd time to be a champion in the UFC, guys. It just is. All right, Jeff, I'm curious. I mean, apart from my monumental snafu of picking Robbie Lawler, because, I clearly have some kind of evil powers there's some evil entity that is mocking me and constantly, you know, going against my predictions. What do you think about this one?
I think there's just something maybe to be said, Robert, that how competitive these divisions are, and that I think I've been hammering it for the past several months now. It's not about who's better and who has the better skill set. It's about who's better on that night, and it's a margin of inches. It's about how these skill sets match up against one another. It's not MMA math, Robert. It is how they match up, like what they do inside the cage, what they've been doing on fight week. You know, Miesha Tate having probably one of the worst weight cuts of her career, you know, despite apparently saying she had everything lined up, had a new hypnotherapist, blah, 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 for Amanda Nunes. And then let's also look at the fact that Robbie Lawler, I think if he does have flaws, he tends to be a slow starter, even in title fights, and he tends to not be the guy that sets the pace in his fights. He tends to not come out quickly and aggressively. I think one of the rare occasions was, I think, in the rematch with Johnny Hendricks. And he tends to wait around for his opponent to do things before he really gets going. And I think we saw that against Carlos Condit. And I think we saw that here. I think he was, you know, he kind of showed those hesitant tendencies. And Woodley is very dangerous. He can be very dangerous in the first round. It's just that problem of what Tyron Woodley is going to show up. is he going to be the guy that lets his hands go in the first round, or is he going to, or is he going to be hesitant and slow to pull the trigger to let his hands go as well? He's had that tendency throughout his career, especially in big fights. Woodley's always been very athletic, great wrestler with heavy hands. And one thing I think we have to give Woodley credit for, a couple years ago, Pat Mullins said he sucks and said he could eat a dog dick for what he did to Carlos Condit. So, I mean, nothing Pat Mullins says really matters, and Tyron Woodley is the one who has the last laugh because now he has the welterweight title. And he wasn't eating dog dicks last night. I'll say that much.
I don't know. He might have been. I don't know what the man does with his spare time. Hey, canine penis is a delicacy in some part of the world. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, I'm sure that's exactly what Jeff was alluding to. You know, selling best at you.
Wait, what do you mean no selling? It was a perfectly legitimate response to the position that was put forth.
Sure it is.
All right.
Move on to the show if I replace you with a robot.
But look, I don't think we can overlook the fact that middleweight, welterweight, lightweight has always been very competitive. But lightweight is more stacked and competitive than ever. Welterweight is a pretty stacked division, and it's been that way ever since GSP left the sport. And middleweight is also very stacked and very competitive right now. Probably
so competitive
the divisions
that the number 13
are really light
contender is a
light heavyweight, flyweight, one of the center divisions. And, I mean, even women's bantamweight has become very competitive, you know, now that, you know, Ronda Rousey is no longer on top.
Yeah, middleweight's so competitive, they're about to give the number 13 contender a title shot.
That's because Jacare is hurt, apparently, but who knows?
No, I don't. Then Yoel Romero's fine.
No, he's not.
He's fine physically.
He's not good in my book.
At the very least, they can find a more deserving contender than old man Henderson.
Well, Henderson was denied his title shot against John Jones. Ultimately,
he destroyed his own knee and then didn't tell anyone until 3 days out.
Okay, but I mean, he earned that title shot, and he never really got it. So, it's Dan Henderson. I'm okay with it.
I know you're okay with it, and that's fine. Plenty of people will be, and I'm just going to mention that once again, they're taking the credibility of their titles and shooting it in the head. They may as well just start predetermining the outcomes and save the issues of having to deal with athletic commissions and just go pro wrestling. Just a thought.
Hey, you're muscling on my gimmick now.
Just a little. All right. What really got to me about this whole thing had nothing to do with the fight. Tyron Woodley did what he did. Congratulations to him. Earned the championship. Not a bad stoppage. Clean stoppage. You know, good fight. Best fight of his career. Pretty much unequivocally. Then he says publicly, repeatedly, that for his first title defense, he would like to fight, get a brief drum roll, please, from all of you at home, not a deserving welterweight contender like Stephen Thompson, not even a rematch with a guy who soundly beat him in Roy McDonald. He doesn't want to avenge a loss. He decided that the most deserving contender to the championship he now holds, the most compelling potential title fight that the UFC could book him in, and is not with any of those. It's not even with a man who has a win in the UFC in the last 2 years. He wants to fight Nick Diaz. If you have not heard that particular him express that, let that swirl around in your mind for a minute or two here. Nick Diaz, in his last four fights in the UFC, is 1-2 with one no contest. His only win in the promotion since returning is over BJ Penn. He lost to Carlos Condit decisively. I don't care what people who whine about, no, Condit just ran away. You know, he moved backwards and he counterpunched the crap out of Diaz. He lost to George St. Pierre, and no, there was no spy in his camp telling GSP that Diaz was going to roll for a bunch of leg locks. He lost to Anderson Silva, and I fundamentally believe that law should stand since they both failed drug tests. But, hey, I just think logically I'm clearly not qualified to be a member of the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And Tyron Woodley thinks that this is the most deserving contender, that this is the most prestigious title challenge to be. I mean, the man clearly has no confidence in his own ability to hold on to the belt if he's trying to cherry pick an opponent of that caliber. It's sad. If the UFC actually goes through with that one, they may as well just start predetermining finishes. I mean, hey, at least Cain Velasquez could have an extended title run that way. And I know that would make a bunch of them happy. And just give up on the question, on the even the very premise of legitimacy if we start going down this path. It bothers me to no end that champions view that as an invitation to their own frivolity rather than an obligation to defending excellence and their own position. It sickens me, to be perfectly honest. However, for a counterpoint of view, we have Mark Radulich here because he likes to push my buttons. So, Mark, you think you can, you believe there is some possible bizarre justification for Nick Diaz, who still listens on a loop to smoke weed every day and can't buy a win because he's broke, because he doesn't pay taxes. Is somehow the deserving contender to the welterweight title. I beg of you, sir, if you think you have a legitimate point, by all means, make it.
Sir, I am here to defend the point of view that there is no such thing as deserving. There is no such thing as specific sportsmanship as such, or even considering the UFC to be part of legitimate sport. I am here to put forth the argument that there is only one thing that is important for the UFC, and it is absolutely the best reason why Tyron Woodley should fight Nick Diaz next. And it goes like this.
Sorry about that. Blog Talk Radio apparently decided that my audio clips are going to spontaneously act up tonight because I just needed more technical difficulties for that one. I'm sorry, Mark. You got cut off there. What was the point you were trying to make?
Well, let me go on and say that when it comes to matchmaking, I believe that the most important thing is... Jeff Harris is either having a terrible time with this or about ready to walk off the show. But seriously, I don't care anymore. I just don't. Between the Conor McGregor shenanigans, Brock Lesnar, the whole bit, while the UFC on the one hand purports that they are a legitimate sport, they are doing circus things on their other hand. And my thing is, at the end of the day, and I've said this all along, anyone that knows me is a part of this show and follows me in my comments, realistically, the idea is to sell tickets, is to garner interest, is to protect your brand. And by protect your brand, I don't necessarily mean by making it a legitimate, about legitimate sportsmanship, but about making it valuable. They just sold their company for $4 billion or some crap?
I think it was 4.2, but yeah.
Okay, so we're talking Disney money here when they bought Lucasfilm. They're doing something right, you know? And so I say if they're going to continue to reward fighters with quote-unquote money-weight fights, whether or not they actually draw money is a whole other issue here. I am not about to go into a whole lengthy discussion about how Nick Diaz is a money draw. That's not why I'm here.
No, that's because even you cannot potentially justify that position.
about. There's no data to back that up. What I'm here to say is there is data to back this up, is that they should give the fighters what make the fighters happy. Give them what they want. They're out there risking life and limb. Why give a quote-unquote deserving guy like Stephen Wonderboy Thompson his rightful title shot when Tyron Woodley can fight Nick Diaz and probably sell more tickets to that fight than he would against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson? And you never know. Tyron Woodley, he might get it. He's probably going to lose that fight to Thompson. I say give him a few fights where he can make some dough, protect his chin a bit, and you know, and make him happy. And while we're at it, bring back Brock Lesnar. He sells a million pay-per-view buys, doing
and
nothing.
And is going to be suspended for 2 years.
Bring him back in 2 years. Have him wrestle a bear. My point here, and I'll let Jeff, who's probably now taking aspirin to get through this segment, and on the subject, is basically if the UFC is a circus, to pretend otherwise is to not live in reality. So when the fighters, rightfully so, pick up on the fact that they're working for a circus and want to further the circus along for their own gain, I say they're only doing what the company said is the priority of that company. We are a circus. We are here to entertain. Run with it, fellas. Though, quick aside, I think Woodley should have picked somebody better than Nick Diaz. But, you know, whatever.
Well, I think Tyron Woodley decided that if he won that fight, he was going to call out the combination of the biggest name that he could think of, along with the best stylistic matchup for him to actually win. And he arrived at Nick Diaz. That
yeah,
could have
I
to go all
that.
The way down the rankings and all the way
that.
Out of people who've won in the last 2 years. Should say something about his confidence.
Well, I was going to say, I agree with your assessment. I don't know if I agree with Tyron Woodley that that was the best option for him, but it's neither here nor there. You know, whether it's Nick Diaz, a bear, a tornado, a sharknado, who gives a shit? You know, whatever gets people's asses in seats.
All right. Jeff, I know you share a bit more of my perspective, and I appreciate Mark, and his comedic stylings talking about that. But your perspective on Tyron Woodley ducking Stephen Thompson.
UFC is not as much of a circus as Bellator MMA currently is.
That's the truth.
They still book relevant matchups, and they still book, you know, matchups with the top-ranked fighters when it matters. Sometimes, you know, when fighters are constantly getting hurt, or when fighters fall off due to, you know, taking supplements or banned substances, it messes things up sometimes. And look, the Brock Lesnar is a UFC heavyweight champion, like it or not. Now, that doesn't mean him coming back for one fight is necessarily a circus, okay? But regardless, this fight with Nick Diaz and Tyron Woodley hasn't been booked yet. But here's what I will say. The UFC enables this kind of behavior when they let Conor McGregor call the shots and basically do whatever he wants, and he's the featherweight champion, and then they give him choice of matchups in a rematch with Nate Diaz at freaking welterweight instead of, you know, either relinquishing or defending his featherweight title. And then, you know, Michael Bisping gets one of the biggest upsets ever and wins the UFC title. And he's like, I'll fight GSP or Dan Henderson. And then Dan Henderson suddenly gets one impressive win over a washout contender in Hector Lombard. And they decide to give the title shot to Dan Henderson instead of Jacare. The UFC does kind of enable it, Tyron Woodley doing these things. Tyron Woodley's problem is that he doesn't recognize that he's not a money weight fighter. And he can call out George St. Pierre, who doesn't have a fight deal with the UFC right now set up, and Nick Diaz until the cows come home. That doesn't mean Dana White and Joe Silva have to listen to him. And he's a case where I do not think they should or will. Tyron Woodley versus Robbie Lawler last night, they only drew 10,000 people in a million-dollar gate. Of the three UFC pay-per-views... What?
That's all they drew live?
Yes. Of the three UFC pay-per-views that have been in Atlanta, this was the least drawing UFC pay-per-view they've ever done in Atlanta. This is compared to John Jones versus Rashad Evans. And so, I mean, there you go. They did about 5,000 less people than that card. So he's not – look, Tyron Woodley is not a money weight fighter. No matter what he says or thinks, he can't – he does not have any bargaining power to call his own shots and make his own fights. He's not Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor can kind of do that. And I'm not saying I like it, but he can do that because he's one of the top draws in the sport. If Ronda Rousey came back and said, screw the title, I just want Holly Holm in a rematch for 5 rounds, they would give it to her because it's Ronda freaking Rousey, and she's one of the top draws in the sport. Tom Woodley is not a money weight. He's not a draw. He can't call his own fights. He's not. He's just not at that level, and he should fight Stephen Thompson yet, and my hope is that Dana White says, screw you, you're fighting Wonder Boy. That's the fight that should happen. That's the fight that needs to happen, and God willing, it will. And you know what? I understand Tyron Woodley. He wants to try and make as much money as he can with as much time as he has left. But at the same time, just because he's champion, that doesn't mean he can call his own shots because of he sees a perceived money weight fight with Nick Diaz. Dude, you're not to be a money weight fighter, to be at that level, it means you need to be of a certain level to be able to command that sort of power. And he doesn't have that power. And, you know, good for him. He was able to strategically get his way to a title shot and win the title. And he won. And he beat a tough opponent in Robbie Lawler. But that doesn't mean you're a money weight fighter of the level of Conor McGregor. You're not going to fight Nick Diaz, and don't make that matchup. Just don't let it happen.
You know, the reality is Jeff and I are closer to the same opinion than, you know, my shtick led on, because, you know, Jeff, in a sobering way, said everything that I'm trying to get across. But, you know, you use the word enable. I would say I would agree with that word, but I would also say if the UFC can't take itself seriously and is sending the message to the fighters that they shouldn't take it seriously – and that you know, they should take a cue from Conor McGregor and Brock Lesnar and some of these other guys to go crazy, you know, and try to create marquee fights out of the ether, then
okay,
why should they be a fan?
Okay, yeah, I get that. But just because, you know, Conor McGregor is a unique commodity and can do those things, Conor McGregor still beat guys that were put in front of him. He beat Chad Mendes. He beat Dustin Poirier. He beat top five opponents, even though people says he doesn't, and he beat Jose Aldo. Okay, he got himself to a certain level, and he was undefeated in the UFC before the Nate Diaz loss. Brock Lesnar, they gave him a quicker path to the title because he's a big draw from WWE, but he still won the title. He still beat Randy Couture. He beat Frank Mir. He beat Shane Carwin. He wasn't given off-ball matchups, tough matchups that were in front of him. So, yes, is there a bit of a circus kind of thing here? Maybe there is, but I think more often than not, we'll see UFC booking relevant, significant matchups of a stronger level than you see in Bellator, who were ready to book Kimbo Slice 3 months after his failed drug test before the guy died. They turned right around. That just says 3 months, so we're gonna book him in 3 months.
Yeah. I disagree with you. I don't. If you're asking me to sort of grade these on a level of, you know, how big a circus are we, I would absolutely say Bellator is more of an embarrassment to MMA than professional MMA than the UFC is. But the immediate event we're talking about is the UFC's event, and a circus is a circus. Just not as big as a circus as their competitor.
I mean, my point is more often than not, we still see the sensical, relevant matchup.
On the lower card, yeah.
Things are changing with USADA, and guys are getting, you know, big names are getting caught using performance-enhancing drugs. It's happening, like, right before. And we haven't gotten a handle on how that affects guys overtraining and getting injured right before fights are supposed to happen, that messes everything up, and then it causes everyone to scramble to change things at the last minute, and that's sometimes how we get these insane matchups.
Okay.
I mean, look, Wilson
Hayes. I don't argue the point.
Wilson Hayes didn't even earn a title shot against Demetrius Johnson, for that matter. He won one fight. And now he's won two, and I still don't think he's top 10.
Okay, to be clear, the ones where they're just trying to fix fights that have fallen through, I'm not citing those. And I would agree with you, sometimes you're going to get crazy matchups because I got to put something on television. But that's not what I'm talking about. And again, you and I do agree that the UFC has pretty much sent out a clear message that if you are somebody who is a draw, you can create your own opportunities, and the UFC 9 out of 10 times will give it to you, which is silly. You know, at some point, these guys that are working their way up to titles have to sort of look around and go, what is it that I have to do? Do I now have to create some sort of gimmick for myself? Do I have to be, you know, do I have to go out there and trash talk and call names and act like an idiot in order for me to get what I rightfully deserve? And I think that's a legitimate question some of these people are asking themselves. You know, if I'm Stephen Wonderboy Thompson and I watch Tyrone Woodley get anything but a matchup against me, my next question is, what am I supposed to do with my persona? Because clearly I'm not getting the job done.
Well, Thompson was way too diplomatic last night, and he was way too nice about Tyrone Woodley basically telling him to, you know, suck his genitals right to his face on Fox Sports 1. That's not what he literally proverbial. He basically told Stephen Thompson on live television for Walter Weiner. That's basically what he did.
Nice. You know, he's got to go the Rocky 3 route. You start showing up to all of Tyrone Woodley's interviews going, hey, why are you ducking me? You know, have a mohawk and chains on the whole bit.
Mr. T could probably actually be hired to do that on his behalf at this point.
I think it would work really well. All right, I have really nothing more to add. I just, to be clear, like I said, I think Jeff is right. 9 out of 10 times when you talk about the lower card fights, people are matched up pretty well. It just when you start getting into the main event level, it starts to get a bit silly. And I know for me as a casual fan, I can see the point that silly sells, and it's in direct conflict with for those people who want this to be a legitimate sport. But in all seriousness, and this is, I'm going to put away the shtick for a moment, just for a moment, you do have to consider what's going to put asses in seats. You can't do empty arena matches. And the idea, especially now with the company being sold, if the next step would be for them to go public, if they ever want to do that, they have to make sure they have constant, steady, high streams of revenue. And so it's hard, you know. At what point does your legitimate sport become an attraction and vice versa? I was thinking real quick, before the show went live tonight about the NFL. You know, the NFL doesn't have teams in London, nor does it have a team in Orlando, yet you're going to be seeing games this season, I believe, in both places. The Miami Dolphins are taking on the Atlanta Falcons in Orlando at the newly refurbished Orange Bowl, now called the Camping World Stadium. If they're not doing it this year, I know they did it last season, but they played a game in London. Now, that's
they've
what
done
is that
for
about?
A couple of years, actually. I think that's a two or three-year-old.
But that's about building up the value of the brand. It has nothing to do with
which will never settle in London.
Well, that's neither here nor there. So that's really my point is that it's a tough business to try to figure out how to get your brand to be valuable while still, you know, trying to be a legitimate sport. That's it. That's all I really have to say. And unless one of you wants to yell at me one more time, I think
I'm not going to yell at you, Mark. And I think there's a lot of some of the things you said.
Okay, great.
I'll yell at you enough on Wednesday.
$60 million opening, baby. Woo!
I have heard not a single positive thing about that movie.
Woo! I couldn't wait for it to be over. All right, I'm out of here. Good night, guys.
All right, Mark. I'll see you Wednesday.
I'll see you Wednesday.
Thanks to Mark Radulich for dropping by. Always good for a bit of shtick there. And he and I will be reviewing Jason Bourne this coming Wednesday. I have no enthusiasm for this movie so far. All right. Moving on to the co-main event. And to be clear, if Tyron Woodley fights anyone other than Stephen Thompson for a reason other than a massive injury or something along those lines, I'm calling bull, and Dana White will have, between that and Dan Henderson getting a title shot, Dana White has lost all credibility when it comes to mocking either Vince McMahon or Bob Arum from now until the end of time. You're a carnival barker at that point, sir. Get used to it. All right, co-main event. This was a bit of an upset. Probably shouldn't have been, in, at least personally. But Karolina Kowalkiewicz defeated Rose Namajunas via split decision. The split was a bit clucky. Little bit cluckified there. Kowalkiewicz pretty much owned rounds 2 and 3, but because her back was on the fence for a bunch of round 2, apparently Clucky thought that was enough, even though she did very little effective offense. I don't care whose back is on the cage. I care about who's doing the more effective work. Positioning on the fence is irrelevant to that. Now, you can, there are guys who fight better with their backs on the cage, or guys who fight better holding their opponents there. But the position itself is not necessarily indicative of one person imposing their will. Efficacy when it comes to striking and grappling is, and Kowalkiewicz was, by every appreciable metric, the more efficacious striker.
Even the first round for me was just a marginal first round for Thug Rose.
I'd agree with that. It was a close first round. This was not a bad fight. Kowalkiewicz, once she got to the clinch, she's pretty nasty from that position. She throws some of those knees to the body, elbows.
That was part of the fight, really. It was the whole clinch game is really what put the fight in her favor.
Yeah, she will probably get a date set for the near future with strawweight champion Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And given that apparently champions can't hold on to their belts, I wouldn't sell her chances short. I'm still going. I don't think I'll pick her when the time comes around, but.
It's a tough fight.
It's a tough fight. That's not a gimme. That's not
Karolina is undefeated, and I mean, Rose was looking better than ever before this fight. Think about this. She just beat Tisha Torres, who was in the top 5, and even though Tisha Torres is not the prettiest fighter, she was undefeated and had a win over Rose Namajunas. Undefeated, 3-0 in the UFC. I mean, she's not the biggest name, but, I mean, she's a tough opponent, and she will be a tough challenge for Joanna Champion.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that fight. Those two fought in an amateur fight several years ago. Joanna submitted Karolina, I believe with a rear naked choke. But definitely I'll be looking forward to that fight getting made when it comes to the it's a good fight. You know, those are two good – those are both very talented women.
I think what Dana White said is he wants to do this fight in Poland if they make the fight.
It's tailor-made for that. I know Joanna said she wants to fight in Madison Square Garden, and I don't think Karolina would object to that, but a lot of people want to be on that card. Not sure how many of them are actually going to make it. If that fight does actually take place in Poland, yeah, it should be good. It should be a good fight. Those two are going to go after it. Neither of them backs up. You know, they come to fight. Not sure what you do with Rose next, specifically who. Maybe a rematch with Carla Esparza as just kind of an outside thought. But she should be able to rebound from this. I just don't think she was ready for that body work that started coming in the second. She lost
good.
A lot of her steam.
Her striking looked really sharp. She was fighting at distance and at range really well. It's just that when she started getting in close and Karolina was able to close the distance in those short exchanges, and she worked really well in the clinch. And, man, the clinch game is just so underrated, Robert. And I just love seeing a fighter like Karolina go after it in the clinch like she did, because I just don't think we're seeing enough of that these days. A lot like, you know, good combination and cutting off the cage. you know, fighters using the clinch, using knees in dirty boxing in the clinch effectively and just doing it well. I really liked how Carolina did that last night.
Yeah, she, I think the probably the three best clinch fighters at the moment, I mean, Demetrius Johnson, I think, is the king right now. But Carolina and Joanna are the other two that come to mind immediately when I think about people who know how to fight from that position, not just hold. They both, those two, all three of those guys, they will chew you up if you're just trying to hang out there.
Krylov also did very well in the clinch last night, too.
Very good clinch. That's very true. All right, next up, bit of an upset here. Jake Ellenberger defeated Matt Brown in the first round via TKO. Jake Ellenberger almost lost this fight, which is weird to think about because Ellenberger came out very quickly, landed a powerful right, dropped Matt Brown, tried to finish him. Matt Brown recovered, and Ellenberger lost his wind and lost his confidence. He started backing up. You could see, I mean, as it was going on, I remember thinking, well, he had his shot. Now Matt Brown's just going to start hitting him repeatedly, and Ellenberger's going to fall over.
Yeah, because that's what's happened in multiple Matt Brown fights, is he almost gets beat up early, and then, you know, his opponents sort of blow their load quickly, and then Brown kind of, he weathers the storm, and then he comes back and wins. I think he did that against Tim Means, against Eric Silva. So multiple, I think, maybe Jordan Mean as well, but I just sort of remember multiple instances, you know, where that exact scenario happens, and it looked like it was going to happen here again against Ellenberger. But credit
then,
to him.
Jake Ellenberger landed that big left kick to the liver.
He's weak in the body, just like Donald Cerrone.
Matt Brown has a provable history of being a little bit soft to the body. Eric Silva hurt him badly to the body. Stephen Thompson, even in that loss, hurt him to the body. Lawler hurt him to the body. These guys, that's just one of his issues, is you hit him good in the body and he's going to start. He feels that a lot more than he feels a punch in the face. Credit to Ellenberger for recognizing that, for being able to capitalize on it. The move to King's MMA seems to have been a good one for him. He looked better. I mean, just in terms of his overall performance, he was much better here than he has been in his last several fights. Not sure he can make a big turnaround with his career, given his age and the fact that welterweight's a pretty solid division. But, you know, he avoided the axe. Look, if he lost that fight, if Matt Brown had avoided that kick and been able to flurry him out, Jake Ellenberger was done. There is no way they could have kept him around in the promotion. So he saved his job. So credit to him for that. Again, I don't know what's next for Ellenberger. Probably a low level guy after, like, maybe Lorenz Larkin after Neil Magny beats Lorenz Larkin. Albert Tumanov wouldn't be the worst option in the world. Tumanov needs kind of a rebound after.
Alan Joban.
Joban's right there, too. That would make sense. And Matt Brown, you know, I don't care who Matt Brown fights. Matt Brown fights are always entertaining at a minimum.
Yeah,
as long as he can avoid another losing streak.
I think you can keep Matt Brown around after this fight, but, I mean, you know, I think the days of Matt Brown being a top five fighter are probably over, but who knows? Stranger things have happened.
It's true. Alistair Overeem is about to fight for the heavyweight title.
Right. Tyron Woodley is the welterweight champion, so there you go.
Michael Bisping's the middleweight champion. Cats and dogs living together. It's madness. It's just madness. All right,
definitely.
At bantamweight, Eric Perez defeated Francisco Rivera via unanimous decision. 230-26 and a 29-28. I can see a 10-8 round for Perez in the third. This was a fight. They had a pretty wild start to the third round. Then Francisco Rivera, between a combination of exhaustion and throwing himself completely off balance, fell over after missing a punch. Perez got on top and just kind of mauled him for the rest of the round. The first two rounds were pretty competitive. I think I gave Rivera the first. Then in the second, Perez kind of found his rhythm, started finding his range. I think Perez got a bad rap when he started because he debuted with a disproportionate amount of hype behind him. And sadly, he's always going to be kind of overshadowed by an unfair, in his case, question of what might have been or, you know, what happened to him. But he got back, you know, kept winning, got a second. This is his second win in a row. He got back on track as far as that goes. He looked pretty good. He looked better here than he did against Taylor Lapillus.
He's 6-2. He's doing well for himself right now.
Yeah, unfortunately, he did lose to Brian Caraway, which means, yeah, no title shot for you ever.
I mean, Caraway's ranked number 4 right now, so it's not the worst loss in the world to have. Rafael Dos Anjos got finished by Clay Guida.
That's very true. That's very true. But he's also not the champion anymore, so it doesn't matter. He's just another guy at lightweight. Kind of sad that a former champion is just another. I mean, look, Luke Rockhold, maybe the former champion, but he's still one of the best three or four middleweights in the world. I don't think there's too much debate there. You lose the lightweight belt, and all of a sudden, you're kind of nothing. You're either the champion in that division, or you're one of a million sharks fighting for scraps.
I mean, it happened to Benson Henderson, and he was looking great for the longest time.
He was looking great, and then now he's out of the UFC. Anthony Pettis was supposed to be the kingpin at lightweight. Now all of a sudden he's
0-3
on a terrible skid. That's a rough division, man. And I feel for anyone who gets to the top and then loses it, because in no other division can you lose the title and suddenly just be the rank and file.
If I can say something about this fight, Robert, Francisco Rivera's performance, it was like an old Leonard Garcia performance to me, where he was swinging hard, swinging a lot, and not really hitting anything at all. And even Mike Goldberg agrees with me. It basically looked like at one point in the third round, he was punching so hard that he got tired and fell down, just punching the air so hard and loading up every punch. And Rivera started out okay, but it just seems like as the fight went along and as Perez started picking him apart, he just abandoned all technique and just started swinging for the fences. And, I mean, they're swinging for the fences and then just abandoning everything and then just doing what he was doing. And he did kind of get Perez into a bit of a brawl, but Rivera was not effective at all there. And it was fun for while it lasted, but it reminded me of the way Leonard Garcia would fight in his heyday, how he would just swing big, swing hard, and generally hit nothing. Is kind of what it looked like.
Let's all be grateful this was not Leonard Garcia, because he would have gotten the decision.
Right.
Leonard, the patron, the avatar of Clucky. All right, and kicking off the main card, we had a flyweight fight between Ryan Benoit and Freddie Serrano. Benoit won via split decision. I scored this for Serrano, but if you scored it for Benoit, I'm not arguing. The first round has perfectly valid positions for either man. Rounds 2 and 3 were clear. 2 for Benoit, 3 for Serrano. I don't think there's much dispute there. It's round 1 that's kind of in dispute, and I don't think it's wrong giving it to either man.
All Serrano had was takedowns and slams, and he did next to nothing with them.
And had he gone into guard after each one, I wouldn't have thought twice about scoring that round for Benoit, but he had positional dominance. And honestly, I was not terribly impressed even with that couple of punches that Benoit did land. I don't think they were as effective as commentary made them seem. Let me phrase it that way. Not that they didn't land, but I think they got oversold a bit. And again, if I rewatch that fight at some point in the future, it might be very clear to me that no, that was Benoit. You overvalued things as you were live blogging, which has happened in the past and will happen in the future. Mostly, I just didn't care about this. There was nothing interesting in this fight, not even the scoring. There wasn't even a 30-27 for me to yell about. Benoit took the fight on short notice. It showed Benoit can easily be out-wrestled. Serrano is just a guy who's only had 4 professional fights.
He's a wrestler.
He is, and just, I think it was Luke Thomas who tweeted this out last night, and it made me laugh, so I feel like repeating it. Freddie Serrano, Olympic wrestler, represented his country at the 2008 Olympic Games in freestyle wrestling, has medaled in the Pan Am Games in wrestling. Not a very good fighter. I mean, undefeated, you know, there were some good things about him, but I think, you know, on the scale of good fighters to, you know, not good fighters, I'm not sure what he falls on the good fighter side of things. And he's got all that background in combat sports. He's not very good. And in a few months, the man formerly known as CM Punk, Phil Brooks, will be fighting in the UFC. With zero combat sports experience, certainly zero competitive combat sport experience. Such is the world we live in. Yeah, we lost Jeff for a minute or two there. He will probably call back in. Since that was the end of the main card, I'm going to go over the prelims very quickly, and hopefully he'll be able to reconnect. Light heavyweight, Nikita Krylov knocked out Ed Herman 40 seconds into the second round with a beautiful left high kick. Ed Herman is just been around forever. Krylov is a legitimate guy to watch at 205. I think his only loss at light heavyweight is to Ovince St. Preux. He had a win at heavyweight. He knocked out Walt Harris. He's on a pretty good winning streak. Light heavyweight is in dire need of talented fighters who are under the age of 29. And he's one of the only ones they've got. But it was a good win. It was a good head kick. Made me happy to watch. Nice finish. At welterweight, Jorge Masvidal defeated Ross Pearson via unanimous decision, 229-28 and 30-27. I don't think any of those scores are wrong. Masvidal finally kept his composure and his thought process throughout an entire fight. Masvidal has always been a good fighter. Unfortunately, what he struggles to do is maintain his pace and maintain his, his sharpness, his aggression, things of that nature for an entire fight. Masvidal is very good in all aspects of MMA when he's actually on point. He just has really struggled with that consistency, not fight to fight, but actually within a fight. And he finally got a bit of that in this fight and was able to beat Ross Pearson. So good for him. Anthony Hamilton knocked out Damian Grabowski in 14 seconds. It was a crappy heavyweight fight. I don't have anything to say about it other than that. Wilson Hayes, who was supposed to fight for the flyweight title on this card, sadly will not get that title shot. Probably ever. I'm going out on a minor limb and saying he's just not going to get it. Defeated Hector Sandoval with a rear naked choke in the first round. Wilson Hayes is a very, very, very good grappler, if you were not aware of that. On Fight Pass, Michael Graves and Bojan Velichkovic fought to a majority draw, 30-27 and then 2-28-28 scores. The 30-27 was for Graves, which I thought was crap. At a minimum, Velichkovic had the... Oh, which round was it? Third, I think. There was one round that I thought was pretty clearly his. Might have been the first, actually. I think you arrive at 28-28 by giving Graves a 10-8 second or third round. I can't remember which one. And then Velichkovic the other two. Which is it's a somewhat defensible position. I will say that. And really, the first round was close enough that it could have been a draw. You could have gone 10-10 in the first, and then they each clearly had a round between 2 and 3, and I think it was Graves 2 and then Velichkovic 3. The draw is okay. I'm okay with that being the result. And then kicking everything off, Damian Brown knocked out Cesar Arzamendi in the first round. I wonder why I ever bothered picking Cesar Arzamendi. He's not very good. All right, Jeff, that was our group of prelims. What burning desires do you have from that set of fights?
We have a hot young prospect at light heavyweight. We finally got one. His name is Nikita Krylov. He's 5 in a row now at light heavyweight. He's looking better and better in each fight. I think what he showed here, his cardio looked great because he had a very fast, hard first round against Ed Herman. And I think he worked well in the clinch, and I think he did that effectively. But Krylov did not look tired at all when he came out for the second round, but he clearly looked like he had done some damage to Herman, and he capitalized and he knocked him out. We have to take this guy very seriously. I think he, you know, I'm not going to call him a future title contender, but he's the, you know, he's the best looking prospect I think we have right now at light heavyweight. And I want to see him in there against a higher level opponent in his next fight. Put him in there against Jimmy Manoa, heck, Rashad Evans, Shogun. Put him in there, Ovin St. Preux even. Put him in there against one
he
of
lost
those.
To St. Preux. He and St. Preux fought, and St. Preux tapped him.
All right. Jimmy, look, Jimmy Manoa is going to need a fight coming up, maybe him, because give him someone in the top, give him someone lower in the top 10 next, that's a fight I want to see for him. I mean, ever since the loss to St. Preux, he's looked great, and he looks better each time out. And look, that is five finishes in a row at light heavyweight. That's impressive.
Yeah. Again, the only prospects in that division are him and Corey Anderson. But at least we have him and Corey Anderson at this point, and we should be grateful that we do, because last year we didn't have either. You know, not too long ago we didn't even have them.
But he, as a heavyweight, it was not a good weight for him. But his cardio, he's in so much better shape. With his cardio at light heavyweight has gotten way better than it was when during his time as a heavyweight. This looks like his ideal weight class, and he's getting better each time out. I'm really high on Krylov right now. Wilson Hayes, look, I don't really see him as the top. The only reason he was given that shot to Johnson is because Johnson had beaten everyone else, and Hayes had a win. He won one fight. He didn't really, like, earn that title shot to me, and he's got another win here. I'm not saying he shouldn't get the title shot, but, like, the only reason he was in that situation is because Johnson needed a fight. And, you know, so putting Johnson in there against a bunch of champions from other organizations, to me, it's not the worst thing to do in a tournament situation, because Johnson's pretty much dominated everyone else, and there isn't really just a ready-made contender
the
right
sad
now.
Thing about that is really this. The top three or four guys Johnson has beaten and beaten decisively already. Unfortunately, no one under those four guys can beat those four guys. I mean, look, Zach Makovsky, all of his faults, was on a... You could have sold him as a contender if he'd been able to get by Joseph Benavidez. He couldn't. And that died. That dream died a horrible death. Formiga lost to Cejudo. I mean, it's unfortunate that you have some potential contenders who can't string together enough wins to justify it on their own or beat, you know, one of those top two or three guys that isn't Mighty Mouse.
You have very good fighters at flyweight. It's just
you do. There are some really good guys in that division.
Johnson's beaten all of them multiple times.
He's run over them like a little dump truck, man. Mighty Mouse is awesome.
And I think one guy who I think maybe Luis Smolka is one guy who I think could be there soon, but Smolka's not quite there yet. He's got a good winning streak going. He's got a good record, but I think he's still not quite at, like, that title contender level. Maybe book him and Wilson Hayes in a fight next, and I think then you could have a more –
I'm fine with Smolka and Hayes fighting. Those two would have some really good grappling exchanges. And the winner, I think the other thing with that is you attach, you know, the caveat to that fight that it's a title eliminator. The winner would get a title shot. And I mean, like you said, the beauty of the flyweight division at the moment is that Demetrius Johnson has beaten the top guys. So if you go outside of the top five or so, it's understandable. Unlike
right.
a certain Brit who's ducking at least two valid contenders.
Hayes was in the – he was only ranked number 7. I mean, maybe
he was,
you can make it –
He was in the top 10 at least.
Right, yeah. Maybe you can make an argument for him going up because I really – I don't even like McCall.
Because Ian McCall should not be ranked number 5.
Yeah. So, there – and Scoggins – and Scoggins, maybe, you know, Scoggins might never even fight it at flyweight again. He might, you know, after missing weight like that, could be out of it. But.
He said he mentioned his, at least his next fight will be up at bantamweight, and he might just. I mean, the thing about Scoggins was he was young. He was early 20s. There was still physical development to be had within his body that might make flyweight prohibitive at this point.
Right.
Which is fine. I mean, look, if you can't make the weight. At least he didn't screw up 3 different fights like a certain other fat guy who just moved up to bantamweight recently.
John Lineker, right.
John Lineker. Or fat Charles Oliveira who keeps screwing up at featherweight. Yeah, I have very little patience for guys who miss weight more than once. But I do wish Scoggins the best up at bantamweight. You know, he's a fun fighter. I've been kind of a fan of his for a while. So all the best. And get your weight cut under control, sir. All right, that was UFC 201. The champions keep falling. Thanks to everyone who stopped by for the live coverage and followed along. There were a couple of decent conversations going on. I appreciate you guys. Anyone who read the report after the fact... thanks to you as well. Somebody suggested that I start including the Vegas odds during my pre-fight blurbs so that they get a better sense of who they have, who the underdogs are and the favorites are and by how much. I will try to incorporate that within the next set. I will come up this Saturday. I ask for all of you for your patience with that because I will just be pulling those odds off of the UFC's website. So if they're inaccurate from the time I type them out to the time they announce them in the cage, blame them. I'm not taking any heat for that one, but I will try including that next time around, see how you guys like it. And I appreciate all feedback. I don't mind, you know, again, if you have a suggestion or a criticism, I'm more than happy to hear you out. That's this reader asked for a very reasonable thing. I'm more than willing to try and accommodate that. We'll see how it goes next time. I don't imagine it will be much of an issue and could very easily be a staple of things going forward. All right, this Saturday, I got a beef with this card a little bit. UFC Fight Night 92. It's coming to the world 40 minutes north of where I currently sit in the Vivint Smart Home Arena in Salt Lake City, Utah. Now, you might, I really, for those of you who might wonder why I will not be attending that event live, well, I was all set to submit my press application. I was going to get Jeff's assistance with filling out some of the forms and just see what happens. It's not a very good card. It's in a smaller market. I figure I had a pretty decent chance. Then I realized that I am currently without equipment that would allow me to actually do coverage from ringside. I do not own a functional laptop at this particular point in time, and I kicked myself repeatedly. So hopefully we get a good enough turnout to get a better card in the future, and I'll be better prepared for this next one. Now you might be saying, Robert, you've bagged on this card. I said it's the worst card on paper they've put together in the last year to 18 months. I would have to double check that factually. Off the top of my head, I'm going to stand by that. Why are you bagging on this card? Well, let's start with the main event, shall we? The main event for UFC Fight Night 92, Yair Rodriguez versus Alex Caceres. That's the main event. Sioux Falls, South Dakota, a smaller market, mind you. Got Tony Ferguson versus Michael Chiesa. In theory, I know that fight fell apart, but that's what they scheduled. Legitimate lightweight contender fight. And had a bantamweight contender fight, too, with Michael McDonald and John Lineker. Those were the top two fights for that card. You don't expect title fights for debuts in smaller markets. That's unrealistic. Sioux Falls, South Dakota got Tony Ferguson and Michael Chiesa. Wound up being Tony Ferguson and Lando Venata, but that's what was scheduled. Again, Ferguson and Chiesa. Utah, we get Rodriguez and Caceres. I feel just a little bit dumped on. Jeff, you're a very positive person when it comes to things like this. Am I being too hard on this card?
You are, because, I mean, no, this fight card doesn't really have it in terms of names and star power. But what I will say is some of those cards are sometimes the ones that turn out to be the most unassuming and fun cards. And, one, it's a free card. It's a TV card. And
true.
Rodriguez and Caceres, who is no longer the worst fighter on the planet, I might add, they're fun to watch, and they usually have good fights. And Rodriguez has been great to watch in the UFC so far. I've enjoyed watching all of his fights. I like Caceres. I like watching him fight. This is a fun matchup. I like this matchup for featherweight. It doesn't mean a lot in terms of rankings and where the guys stand, but, I mean, it's MMA fights. I'm going to watch this card. And there are some other good fighters up and down the card. Again, not a lot of huge
really?
Names in terms of rank.
I'm genuinely struggling to find a couple.
Dennis Bermudez is a...
Bermudez. Nah, Bermudez's time has come and gone.
I mean, he's 8-2 at featherweight. Excuse me, 8-3. I like Zach Cummings. He's a good fighter. Ponza Nibio, he's a decent fighter. There's some good – I mean, look, again, in terms of name value – and Cub Swanson, he's fighting Khalid Jiri. That's a good fight.
I'll give you Swanson and Khalid Jiri. That's – I mean, neither of them are making waves, but at least that's recognizable and borderline relevant.
They're putting that on – I don't know why. I guess to give some juice to Fight Pass, that could easily be that's arguably a better main event than the main event for this card.
At the very least, it's a better co-main event.
Had we maybe not lost the Chiesa fight and you maybe put Swanson versus Khalid Jiri as the co-main event, I mean, it's a much better looking card. And then just think about. Again, these cards that are unassuming, that don't really have a lot of name or star power, still turn out to be fun cards. And it was like that way in the WEC days, too. And I'm looking forward to this card. I don't care what you say, Robert. And I like
that's
Marina
fair. I acknowledge the fact that this could be an awesome night of fights, and I hope it is. Anytime I say I think a card is bad on paper, I don't like it. I don't like saying that. I have to cover these things. I want them to be great. I do. I love good fights. I love exciting fights. I love technical fights. I love most fights. And I hope it is. I really do. I just meant that on paper, this is enlighten the world on fire.
I think
this might
not
even draw a decent rating.
Kamosi versus Talos Latis, I think, is interesting. Do you even know Kamosi's on a 3-fight winning streak right now?
I do. I also, it's Chris Kamosi.
I mean, Latis is ranked in the top 15. So this is, that's a huge fight for Kamosi. Now, I'm not really looking forward to this card as I am to maybe other cards, but I'm going to watch it just because I like MMA and I like watching fights over the weekend. So I'm not expecting great things out of it, but there are some guys I like on this card and I'm interested in, and I'm going to want to see him fight.
All right. And again, that's one of the reasons I like having you around. You have a different perspective than I do. All right. The main event, Yair Rodriguez and Alex Caceres. The UFC really – I got to say this, first of all. I have not been a big fan of Yair Rodriguez. It was only the most recent fight when he knocked out Andre Feely that I thought he finally looked like a guy with some potential. His previous fights, I didn't care for them. I think I even scored against him on one of them. Just I wasn't a fan. He looked better against Feely. He just needed some seasoning, and he's slowly getting there. But the UFC clearly like him. He's a wild man, and that can be very fun. He's still coming up in the world, but that's why he's fighting a guy like Alex Caceres, who's just a perennial kind of their guy. No longer the worst fighter on the UFC roster, but I think that dubious distinction at this point in time goes to CM Punk, who has yet to have a professional fight.
Not even the worst fighter on the planet.
No, he's not the worst professional fighter on the planet, but I've seen way too much regional MMA to claim that about him at this point in time.
Well, someone else did.
At the time, it might have been a bit more valid. That was three or four years ago. It was 3 or 4 years ago, and he really sucked. Three or four years ago, Caceres was not good. Now he is good. Good for him for improving.
Not worst fighter on the planet, bad.
Maybe not, but so again, there was a stretch of time he was easily the worst guy in the UFC. But
it's not a hill I like to die on. It's just funny stuff that was said on this show that I like bringing up every now and again.
And Caceres, he's here to lose. And I'm not saying he's going to, but he was put in this position because he's another kind of wild fighter. Like Rodriguez, so it'll be an entertaining fight. He's somewhat recognizable. I mean, people at least remember the afro. And he's a decent name to have on your resume as you're coming up the ranks at featherweight. That's kind of the envisioned path here. And realistically, I'm not sure I see too much reason that it's not going to happen that way. Caceres will not be sucked in and just off-put by the wildness of Rodriguez the way traditional fighters are. Caceres being a bit of a non-traditionalist himself. That being said, I don't think he's in a position to challenge Rodriguez on the craziness of his tactics. It's going to take a guy like a Dennis Bermudez, who's also on this card, for example. But someone with that style, that gritty, tough, I don't care if you throw something crazy, I'm going to get in your face, I'm going to punch you a few times, and we're going to see how things go from there, who will make it a dirty, ugly, gritty fight from the clinch to the mat, to this, you know, that kind of fighter is the guy who's going to test and probably beat Rodriguez the first time he loses in the UFC. I don't think Alex Caceres is the guy who's going to do that. That being said, my history of predictions so far is pretty poor. There is some, evil entity that is mocking me, but I feel Rodriguez is a pretty safe pick over Alex Caceres at this point in time. Jeff, what do you think? Are you going with Rodriguez?
I'm picking
Caceres. Believe in the insanity?
I love Rodriguez. I love that performance against Andre Feely, but I'm picking Caceres because Caceres is more experienced than him, and I think he probably has a better overall grappling game than Rodriguez, and I think if he's smart, he can work that effectively against Rodriguez instead of trying.
All right.
Yeah, doesn't want to get into those wild exchanges with him, but if he can wrangle him on the ground, I think that can win him the day.
All right, that's true. I mean, we have not – Rodriguez's grappling game is relatively untested at this point. All right, the co-main event
– look what Caceres did to Cole Miller.
That's true, though at this point I'm on the verge of just saying that Cole Miller sucks and moving on from it. look, Miller's had a great run. He's been around for a long time. He's had some really entertaining fights. I just think his time is up. But yeah, he did. He out-grappled Cole Miller, tossed him around when they got in the clinch. All right, co-main event, Dennis Bermudez and Hani Jason. I don't have a whole lot here. Dennis Bermudez just barely got a decision over Tetsuya Kawajiri. Prior to that, he was submitted by Ricardo Lamas and knocked out by Jeremy Stevens. he's a weird – Bermudez is a weird guy to get a handle on because he had those two losses, but he had a pretty big winning streak going into the Lamas fight, including submitting Clay Guida, and I'm generally okay with anyone beating Clay Guida. Hani Jason, on the other hand, just had that win overturned because he failed a drug test for a diuretic. He lost to Robbie Peralta before that. Jason's a bit of a wild man, but I don't think he's – I don't know. I don't see him beating a grounded fighter like Bermudez. Again, a lot of these wild fighters, when you fight someone who's been around enough to have seen that and not be kind of struck cross-eyed by your insanity, they settle down. They know how to counter it. They know how to work around it. Jason's also very accepting of being put on his back. And he's got a decent guard, but – I don't think he's going to be able to catch Bermudez. Lama submitted him with a guillotine choke after rocking him with a punch. I think Bermudez is just the safer bet this time around. I think he's going to be able to out-grapple Jason and get a decision. Jeff, Mr. Jason, is he pulling the upset?
No. Dennis Bermudez grinds out the win here.
All right. Next up, middleweight fight, Tallis Latis, who exists within the top 15, even though he's on a two-fight losing streak. The split decision to Michael Bisping, and then he just got schooled by Gegard Mousasi. That was a deeply one-sided affair. He needs to break that losing streak. He's fighting Chris Camozzi, who's quietly, and I mean quietly, on a three-fight winning streak. Since returning, he beat Tom Watson, beat Joe Riggs, beat Vitor Miranda. Only the Miranda fight was all that impressive. The Watson fight, man. Tom Watson's a weird guy in terms of his fights. Old man Joe Riggs. I joke that he's old. Joe Riggs, guys, the guy who looks like a catcher's mitt, only 33. It's crazy. And he fought intelligently against Vitor Miranda. I got Latis here. Camozzi struggles against guys who are good on the mat. If you try to strike with him, he's pretty good there and can kind of work with you and outwork you. I think Latis punches enough to get in close, takes him down, and probably taps him out. Latis isn't Jacare level of in terms of his submission game, but he's got a good submission game. I think Latis submits Camozzi. Though I will probably be this is one of those fights that I'm going to wind up eating my words because some evil deity laughs and goes, "Nope, Chris Camozzi with a flying tornado kick in the first round just to make you look stupid." Jeff, do you think Camozzi cracks the top 15? Or does he go back to the bottom of the barrel?
I don't think he does here. I will say Camozzi has done well for himself, you know, in this latest run in the UFC. He justified his spot on the roster after they brought him back at the last minute to essentially lose to Jacare again. Tallis Latis, for that matter, has as well. I mean, his only two losses, one was a tough fight against Michael Bisping. The other is to Gegard Mousasi, so two top-level middleweights. And this seems to be, you know, the exact type of fight tailor-made for Latis to win. I would say Latis is a better striker and grappler overall than Camozzi. But, you know, Camozzi did very well against Miranda, so maybe he can surprise us here, but I'm not betting on that or expecting it.
All right, at welterweight, Santiago Ponzinibbio will fight Zach Cummings. Cummings is, I'm trying to get a visual in
one.
My head. Yeah, he's 4-1. His only loss is to Gunnar Nelson. He's that bald guy with the... Sorry, this is not going to help anyone, but he's that bald guy with the beard. Okay, I need to know what he looks like. Kind of a grinding grappler. And then you got Ponzinibbio, who's a wild, powerful striker. His only losses in the UFC are to Ryan LaFleur, who's pretty good, and Lorenz Larkin, who's also not too shabby. Going off that win over Court McGee, looks pretty good in that fight, actually. This is the first time we've seen him against a guy who's going to try to grind him out. I usually go with the wrestlers there. Pending my confirmation that this Zach Cummings is who I think he is, I'm going with Cummings here. But Ponzinibbio, not the worst guy in the world. Again, I reserve the right to change my mind on that one after I confirm his identity. Jeff, the Argentinian, Ponzinibbio, you think he's getting it done here?
No, Cummings comes out on top here. I got Cummings all the way.
You're agreeing with me. You're agreeing with me entirely too often. This is going to come back to bite you.
Well, I mean, it's fine with me. I just think Cummings is a very, you know, tough, underrated opponent. And I think he's a guy that gets slept on quite a bit.
That's certainly true. All right, at middleweight, Trevor Smith. He was supposed to fight Brad Tavares. That actually would have been an interest. No, sorry. Tavares was linked with Latus. Was this always? This was always Trevor Smith and Joe Gigliotti. Gigliotti? I don't know. I'm going with Gigliotti until I know better. Gigliotti is making his UFC debut, to the best of my knowledge, whereas Smith beat Dan Miller. Ah, man, Smith's had a rough go of it. He's fought some tough guys.
He's one of those holdovers from, like, the Strikeforce era.
Yeah. I'll go with Hot Sauce Trevor Smith there. I usually do over debuting guys.
He's kind of a journeyman.
Yeah. You disagree with me, or you think Trevor Smith keeps on the winning track?
I got Smith here. I agree with you.
All right, and kicking off the bout, the main card is a women's strawweight fight between Marina Moroz and Danielle Taylor. Ah, Moroz, you were supposed to be something after that big win over Joanne Calderwood. Then you just kind of got beat up by Valerie Letourneau. She rebounded with a win over Christina Stanciu. I remember that fight. Pretty close fight, actually. Danielle Taylor, I know nothing about. I believe this is her promotional debut. I'll go with Moroz in that case.
Yes.
Women's strongweight has plenty of fighters who are good that you've just never heard of, and I freely admit Taylor might be one of those.
Okay, so Taylor is 7-1. This is her UFC debut. All her fights, her pro fights beforehand, were in King of the Cage. So this will be her first fight in the UFC. I'm going to go ahead and go with Moroz. I mean, it's hard just, you know, when we haven't seen a fighter like Taylor and we don't know much about her, but I'm not seeing enough to really bet against Moroz here.
All right. Kicking off on the prelims, Utah's own Court McGee, he actually fights out of the Pit Elevated in Orem. He will fight Dominique Steele. I got Steele here. McGee can be out-wrestled. Steele's an explosive athlete. I'm pulling for Court McGee. I like Court McGee, but in terms of who I think's going to win, I think it's going to be Dominique Steele. And I hope I'm wrong. At heavyweight, yay. Victor Pesta fights Marcin Tybura. Both of these guys have fought in the UFC before. Pesta is 1-2 in the promotion. He's lost to Ruslan Magomedov and Derek Lewis. Those two are pretty good, though. Beat Konstantin Arokin, but Arokin sucks. And Tybura, I seem to recall, lost his UFC debut. Boy, these two are yuck. This is a bad... I'm thinking about this fight now. Sure, I'll go with Pesta. Really, I just want that to be over as quickly as humanly possible. At lightweight, David Timur will fight Jason Novelli. I know nothing of Novelli, and I recognize Timur's name, at least. But it's lightweight. One of these two guys could be champion in the next 18 months. So pay attention. I'll go with Timur. Again, just the name I recognize. At featherweight, Taruto Ishihara, who has a draw in the UFC with he had that draw in the final of the UFC Japan doohickey tournament. It was a good fight. Then he knocked out Julian Arosa at UFC 196. Fighting Horacio Gutierrez, who I know nothing about. I'll go with Ishihara there. Very little reason to pick against him. Kicking off the main event of the Fight Pass prelims is Cub Swanson and Tatsuya Kawajiri. That's a pretty good fight. Swanson... he done recently?
He
beat Joaquin Diaz.
Yeah.
He lost to Frankie Edgar and Max Holloway, but those are Edgar and Holloway are, again, two of the four best featherweights in the world. The other two being Conor McGregor, if he ever makes the weight again, and Jose Aldo.
You know who else beat Matt Holloway? Dennis Bermudez, who's fighting on this card.
Much earlier in his career. I actually wouldn't mind a rematch, because I think Holloway would school him this time around.
No, it's title or bust for my boy Holloway.
I want him to fight for the belt, too. I think he'll take it, to be quite honest. And I don't care if that's against McGregor or Aldo. When Max Holloway's title shot comes, I think I'm going to pick him. Kawajiri coming off of that loss to Dennis Bermudez. I got Swanson here. And then kicking everything off, we have, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? To further prove that my home state is getting dumped on just a little bit, we're kicking things off with another crappy heavyweight fight between Chase Sherman and Justin Lede, two guys I believe making their debuts. Yeah. Lede's last name is shorter. At the moment, that's my only criteria. All right, Jeff, there's not a whole lot good there, but what are you looking forward to out of that set of fights?
I think McGee versus Steele is going to be a fun scrap. And Cub Swanson, Kawajiri, it's a great fight, competitive featherweight fight, at least on paper. So I would have just the co-main event just to, you know, put a stronger fight on the main card. But there you go.
Well, they're trying to make Fight Pass a thing. I mean, look, much as I'm going to yell about this later, the main event of the Fight Pass prelims for one of their near future cards is actually Neil Magny and Lorenz Larkin.
I mean, Fight Pass is a thing. So if it's just from the perspective of, we're not demoting you, it's just that, you know, we want a relevant fight for the Fight Pass viewers. I kind of get it, but, you know, they place it so early on the card, you get this sense that it is a demotion because, you know, sometimes people don't even show up until the main card starts. So that's just kind of the thing.
Yeah, I understand they're trying to make it seem like it's a prestigious position. It's a position that you shouldn't view negatively. It's that, unfortunately, altering that perception is still a process they're working on. But, you know, the featured preliminary on Fight Pass at least gets a bit of a promotional push. They try to make sure people know about it, at least. So we'll see. And so next Sunday, I will have Saturday, not Sunday. Yeah, because scheduling an MMA event for Sunday afternoon in Salt Lake City, Utah is such a good idea. That'll lead to healthy tickets. No, it's Saturday. The last time they tried to schedule an event here, scheduled it on a Sunday and sold, like, no tickets. Because, really, afternoon, I mean, these things start relatively early. You're going to try to start at Sunday afternoon in Salt Lake City, Utah. Come on, guys. Don't be stupid. But, no, next Saturday, I will have live coverage of this event in the MMA zone of 411mania.com. Stop by, say hello, make fun of the card. I will do my best not to. If the fights suck, I will say that they suck, but I'm going to try not to mock this card too much more before it actually happens, because while it's weak on paper, the actual fights could be gangbusters, and I really hope they are. I really, really do. All right, Jeff, what movies have you seen, and what do you got to plug for yourself? Because I know you did a bunch of stuff at San Diego Comic-Con, so what do you got coming up?
I got some more stuff I'm working on getting in from Comic-Con. Jason Bourne, my review of that is in. Please check that out. Give that a little love. Check out my column about Mark Hunt and just the way he's been handling things post-UFC 200 and why I think he's just totally mishandling his business with all of that. Getting a lot of comments, a lot of attention. So thank everyone who read it and commented. Don't know if I'm still working on Suicide Squad, so we might be having a review for that. I liked Jason Bourne for the most part. It's just that after the excellence of Supremacy and Ultimatum, it felt like hitting a double instead of a home run. I also likened it to, you know, boxing or MMA turns. It felt like Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass had ring rust here. But I still enjoyed it for the most part and had a good time. I can understand why people were less than enthused by it, but anything beats the terribility of the Bourne legacy. So go watch Jason Bourne and enjoy it, Robert. On me.
I will be watching it. I will be reviewing it. And how dare you insult Jeremy Renner, sir? How dare you?
One thing I just want to say, just one bit of news. The last UFC on Fox card with Holm versus Shevchenko, they pulled in 4.69 million viewers for the main event, and they averaged about 3 million viewers for the main card. So, you know, despite all, you know, the controversial news that UFC is going through right now, what with Jon Jones and Lesnar, you know, to have a company that just sold for $4 billion and then their last Fox card pulled in some pretty impressive numbers, you know, headlined by, you know, the women's bantamweight division. That's a pretty good spot for them because they're going to be have to their broadcast deal with Fox. I think that's going to be coming up soon. So this is a good spot for them to be in right now.
Well, Holly Holm turned into a pretty decent draw after she knocked out Ronda Rousey. Unfortunately,
yeah.
She's now a draw on a two-fight losing streak, which is a terrible place to be.
Yeah, well, again, that's your as I pointed out, Robert, that's your fault for
it is my fault. I take full responsibility for that.
But thank you very much, Robert, and can't wait to be back again next week.
Yep, I'll see you then.
Yep.
All right, next week, Jeff and I will be reviewing UFC Fight Night 91, but that's all we'll be doing, because after having 6 events throughout the month of July, thanks for that, the month of August has only 2 events. UFC, I believe only 2, let me double check. You have UFC Fight Night 91, which is the 6th. Then you have on August 20th, Diaz versus McGregor 2. I didn't like that fight the first time around. I don't especially care for it this time around either, folks. Then the one after that. No, then there is the 27th. Okay, you have Maya versus Condit. Another Fox card. Nice. This one's in Canada. Pettis and Oliveira at featherweight. Boy, that's a battle of the head cases. You get the rematch between Jim Miller and Joe Lozon, though. That was crazy the first time. Ought to be pretty good this time. Yeah, it's not a great card, but that's not a bad card. So next week we'll be back and reviewing that. Then we will be off the 7th and we'll be back the 14th, unless something major happens and we decide to have a show. We will be off the 14th. No. Never mind. We don't get a week off. Okay. We'll be back next week to review Fight Night 91 and preview UFC. That can't possibly be right. I got it. Because, that's the 20th. Sorry, riveting radio, I know. And, we'll just be reviewing that, and then we'll be previewing 202 the next week. So, just reviewing UFC Fight Night 92 next week. Hope you'll all come back. We appreciate you listening. I appreciate you. I hope you share. If you know someone who you think might like the show, let us know. Point them in our direction. Give us a chance to win them over. That's all I ask. All right. I will see you guys next week for that. Until then, please continue to be well, be safe, and behave. Again, check out Jeff's review of Jason Bourne. Mark and I will be reviewing it on Wednesday, so stop by for that. And we'll be back next week. Until then, as I just said, on behalf of Jeff Harris, I'm Robert Winfrey, and please continue to be well, be safe, and behave, and we'll see you next week.